Blog Talk Radio.
Radio. We hope that you'll join us after this show for our after show on Google Plus and or YouTube under A Real Point of View. But for now, let's go ahead and talk about our theme for today. You know, it's better that the person who brought up this theme give you kind of an overview about the theme. So joining me is one of my co-hosts, the illustrious, the vivacious Miss Karen D, and she is the movie maven. How you doing, Karen? Hope everything is going well. And just tell us how you doing. Let's start that way first.
Ho, ho, ho. I'm doing great, Gregory. I hope you've been a good boy this Christmas. Ho, ho, ho.
Not so much, but, you know, I'm still... It's still time, so hopefully within the next week I'll be a little better by the time Christmas Eve gets here next Thursday.
Oh, you've got a long way to go, little boy. Oh, ho, ho.
Oh, okay.
Okay, I'll stop.
All righty. Well, today, ladies and gentlemen, basically with our theme tonight, we want to talk about what's kind of missing from a lot of these holiday movies. You know, holiday season comes around, and we know it's a very commercial time of year. There's things to buy for family, friends, acquaintances, coworkers, whatever the case may be. And we're kind of missing the point of what Christmas is all about, or what the holidays are all about, because it's not Christmas for everybody. But it is the holiday season. We all want to make merry and get together and, you know, reacquaint ourselves with our family and friends. And, but when it comes to the films that we watch over that time frame, you know, the things that were quite sentimental to us in the past, Karen and I were kind of wondering, well, what happened to all that sentimentality? What about these newer films that are coming out in droves every holiday? What about the classic films, like classic films that put quality above quantity, put, you know, the family above the commercial end of things? Why don't you kind of give us your take, Karen, a little bit about how you were feeling about this particular thing?
Well, Greg, I would like to call this show Christmas Movies or We Need to Talk. Because, I mean, I agree with you, the way in which you're characterizing this. I was thinking about this week's show, I was trying to remember the last time that I saw a really terrific movie about Christmas that wasn't made during the 30s or the 40s or the 50s. And I was hard-pressed to come up with one, frankly, that had been made in the last 15 years or so. I mean, I've done some research since my initial impression, and actually I have come up with a couple that have been made in the last, in the last 15 or 20 years or so. But generally speaking, my initial impression is that the better movies about Christmas were made during Hollywood's golden age, during the, like I said, the 30s, 40s, and 50s. And of course, you know, the gold standard for Christmas movies, as far as I'm concerned, is It's a Wonderful Life, the Frank Capra movie starring James Stewart and Donna Reed, and Lionel Barrymore. You know, there were so many good people in that movie. That's the gold standard, but of course you could also look at The Christmas Carol, both versions made in 1938 and 1951, the first one starring Reginald Owen and the second one starring Alastair Sim, both British movies. But they, you know, both of them were quite good in their own way, although I personally have a preference for the Alastair Sim version, the 1951 version. But, you know, other movies like, you know, Christmas in Connecticut with Barbara Stanwyck or Holiday Affair with Robert Mitchum, just, you know, really lovely movies. And I was thinking, well, why do those movies seem so good? Even White Christmas, you know, which I would take any day over Holiday Inn because Holiday Inn has some special problems. But even, you know, I would add The White Christmas as one of the, you know, a really wonderful movie about the holiday season. What was so great about those movies compared to later movies? Is it because we were just more, less demanding as a movie audience or more naive? We didn't have many expectations, or maybe just as a country, we were more engaged with Christmas as a holiday, and, you know, in the intervening 50 or 60 years or so, maybe we've become less enamored. Maybe we're a little fatigued with Christmas, generally speaking. It certainly seems to have become more commercial, although people seem to have been as engaged with, you know, shopping at the last minute and running around and getting presents and stuff like that as they've always been. But there seems to be, I don't know, these days, maybe a little bit more of a focus on actually getting the presents and not really stopping to focus on the actual true meaning of Christmas. Or maybe it's like more, like, you know, I get this one thing, but I need more, whereas, you know, when you look back, you know, you come across a kid who just wants like a toy train. Or a kid who wants, you know, another child who just wants $1 or something, and they're happy with that. I'm hard-pressed to think of a child who's, like, happy with just the one thing in modern Christmas movies. So, you know, so that's part of it. For me, that's part of it, but, you know, I think we, you know, what we want to do is kind of, what I want to do anyway, is mention, like, one Christmas movie from the Golden Age that I really liked and why, and then maybe bring up a gem that I found in the last 15 or 20 years and bring that to our audience's attention as maybe an exception to the rule. But I will say, you know, out of all the major Christmas movies that have been made that have been theatrical film releases, I think there are more that have been made that come to mind as quality films that were 40, 50, 60 years old than there have been within the last 20 years. That being said, I still think there are some gems in the last 20 years, or even the last 30 years, that definitely deserve a mention. So why don't you go first, Greg, and talk about your Christmas movies first.
Well, I do want to say one thing in commentary to what you were saying. I think part of the reason why there is such a big disparity, we'll say, in the quality and quantity of the films, it seems like there were a lot of films over time, like you said, from the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, that are outnumbered by the last 20 years of films about holiday season, Christmas, and related ilk. But I think there's a big disconnect, and I think part of the reason for that is, you know, when we were younger, parents were younger, their parents were younger, the family unit was a primary thing. It was a primary focus of the parents, the children, and keeping the family together, eating together, doing things together. These days, sadly, technology has taken away a lot of that from existence, with kids being on iPads or notebooks or computers, things of that nature. A lot of the family time is something that's in the past. So when they're spitting out these movies over the last 15, 20 years, they're just kind of filling whatever void there is for people who are looking for these kind of films to kind of reminisce on how things were in the past. But sadly, the quality of the film has not stayed the same over time. And with the fact that these people aren't, you know, coming together in groups as much, these movies are kind of like an afterthought. Like, you know, let's get a holiday movie out there. Somebody will like it or watch it at least, especially someone who's sadly alone, lonely, or say they're in a group of people and it's just not working out. They want to go do something else, but they don't have the time or the effort. So, you know, you can see one of these movies, go to the video store, get one of these movies, stream it, whatever it is. And it doesn't have to be so enriched with wonderment like it seemed like these movies in the past were. And some of the things that you see in these films in the past, you felt like you could relate to them, and they related to your life. They are things that you could relate later on in your life. You felt it was that type of a quality, that type of an experience. And you're not getting that kind of experience with a lot of the movies that are out. Excuse me, again, as we were alluding to the last 10 or 15, 20 years. And that's a sad thing. It's a sad commentary because, you know, seemingly in my mind, love is a big deal. In my mind, togetherness is a big deal. In my mind, you know, family is important. You can't always be together, but you can think about things. You can reminisce about things in your mind when you see a movie or a film that expresses some of the things that you remember from your childhood or from your family unit or whatever. So with that being said, I took a different approach slightly, so I hope you don't mind. I decided to go the Scrooge route. I am a big, big Dickens fan, and A Christmas Carol has always been a very important movie for me. It's a transitional movie. It goes from the dread and the dark corners of the world into the light, and all the things that go between the time that that begins and the time that the movie ends. And my attitude, if it was in a negative vein, always seems to be better at the end. So I wanted to start with the film that I looked at first, which was the Alistair Sims version of A Christmas Carol, which was in 1951. This particular movie, I thought, opposed to the Christmas Carol from 1938, which was a decent film. I enjoyed that too. But I think I enjoyed this one more because I was really going through, I felt like I was going through what Ebenezer Scrooge was going through as he went from one moment to the next moment in this film. And it also brought out a few things that I wasn't quite aware about his relationship with Marley, for example. You know, in earlier films, Marley was kind of an afterthought. He was the ghost that wakes Ebenezer Scrooge up when he feels like he's had bad porridge, bad pudding, and he's the one rattling the chains. Well, it was enough significance to say, yes, this is what's going to happen, and you're going to be visited by three ghosts. It was a very different scenario in the 1951 version where we actually see him interact with Marley while Marley's alive and how Ebenezer's personality changes when money and greed seep their way into his life. And Marley is there to reinforce all of this. So it's more of a transitional film. You see a lot more about really what affected Scrooge and really how Scrooge got to be such a crude and impersonable person. But this is a great film because as he comes into the light, he spends more time trying to amend his past discretions with the different people that have passed through his life. And so much so that a very sentimental part of this film, if you haven't seen this film, I'm going to spoil it a little bit, a very sentimental part of this film is when Ebenezer Scrooge, after the ghost had visited him and he's in this wonderment of personality, he goes to visit his nephew, Fred, and his nephew and his nephew's wife and their company that they have over at the time. It is such a sentimental moment. It is such a breakdown and breakthrough moment for Ebenezer Scrooge that you can't help but like the person that he's become. And so that was a wonderful movie for me. So I decided, you know, I want to look at other Scrooges over time. So to play with that within the realms of the scenario, I looked at a more modern version of Scrooge, which was Scrooged, which came out in 1988, and this starred Bill Murray. This added more of a comedic twist to the Dickens story. And now we have an executive, which Scrooge was an executive, of course, back then. But we had this really rude and crude executive in this film, played by Bill Murray as Ebenezer Scrooge in this movie. And it is a really, really good film. I actually like this film. Then I also wanted to take a look at another Scrooge, which was them changing the Scrooge from being a male character to a female character. And this starred Vanessa Williams, and this movie came out back in, what was the year of this one? This was like 2000, I believe. And this was called A Diva's Christmas Carol, which was kind of a made-for-TV movie, but it was actually a pretty decent movie. And then I looked at Jim Carrey's animated film, A Christmas Carol, that came out in 2009, which I thought for it being an animated film, and, you know, it wasn't going to be anywhere near as long as a major motion picture, but at the same time, I think it hit on a lot of poignant points, and it wasn't, believe it or not, with Jim Carrey in it, you'd think it would be a lot more hilarious and whimsical, and it was not. It really stuck a lot more toward Dickens' version of the movie. I mean, of the story. And it was really a very good animated film, like one of the better ones I've seen, especially in that era. So that is one of those pictures that is more recent, which actually was really pretty good. And then lastly, Karen mentioned it, I was going to mention it too, a movie that came out in 1945, going back in time again, which was Christmas in Connecticut with Barbara Stanwyck and Dennis Morgan. So those are the movies that I kind of want to talk about on and off as we go on. That movie was kind of a special movie for me because of the sentiment about a military person coming back and not having a place to go for Christmas. So those are the movies that I kind of was looking at, Karen. So however you want to go about this, we can. I spent quite a lot of time on Alistair Sim's Scrooge. It was a great film for me, and it always cheers me up. And probably the last two or three years, easily, I go back to that film throughout the year and watch the last 15 minutes of that film to give me inspiration and give me a better feeling about how I feel at the time. And that's amazing, this Christmas film, this Dickens presentation with Alistair Sim as the Ebenezer Scrooge has always affected me in a positive motif.
Well, let me talk about some of the movies that I was interested in. Like I said, I think the gold standard for me of theatrical release Hollywood films is It's a Wonderful Life. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. I can't say that I absolutely, positively, religiously watch it every year. I can't say that I always mean to watch it every year. Sometimes the holidays just get away from me, and before I know it, it's like, oh my goodness, the holidays are over, and I didn't watch It's a Wonderful Life. I certainly got tired of waiting for NBC to actually make it available to be seen, because they got the – it used to be seen every year – you could rely on it, and then NBC bought the rights to the movie and held on to it and would only show it like maybe one time. And that might be Christmas Eve, and if you weren't staring at the TV, then you just missed it, and that was it. Before that, you could see it on TNT. You could see it on different channels, especially if you had cable. So I bought the movie because I didn't want to be held hostage by NBC anymore after that. But anyway, why is It's a Wonderful Life the gold standard for me? Because I think Frank Capra, who produced this movie and directed this movie, just was so wonderful in the ways in which he blended comedy and pathos. And you know, he's sort of he's sort of known or sort of like the archetype for creating like the optimistic viewpoint of a worldview in a movie. And certainly It's a Wonderful Life has those elements, but it's also included in there are very real elements of what goes on when you know, you don't have financial security, when you're trying to make your way in a world that can be hostile, when your dreams and plans are deferred because of events that are beyond your control or because you're trying to do the right thing. And that's really interesting. And to me, that's what carries the story through the ages. If it was simply a happy story, it would be completely forgettable. But even in the 2000s, it seems even more so in the 2000s, we're sort of beset by people who are affected by dreams deferred. I wish I could have gone to school, but I wanted to, I was going to take this job, but, or I had this job, but then I lost this job because the Great Recession of 2008 put these things on hold. I couldn't go to school, or I was in school, but I had to stop going. Those sorts of things. And when It's a Wonderful Life was done, and I want to say it was 1946, that it was released in 1946, but that movie was made right after the end of World War II, but I think, you know, the impressions from the Depression were still very real. No, the United States was not technically in a depression in 1945, but the memories of that were still crystal clear in 1945. And people who could not do what they wanted to do because of the war, you know, the war came, so they had to stop what they were doing. They had to stop going to school or stop working or whatever and go to war. Or people, parents, the idea of having to deal with parents who are suddenly gone and, you know, how do you continue their business? Those things are very real, and they're things that we deal with today, just like the people dealt with them 70 years ago. So I think Capra masterfully blended those things, but it wasn't all sad. He had great comedic touches in there because of the interplay of James Stewart with the man who played his brother and the man who played his father, and Henry Travers, who played Clarence, the angel who comes along to help him, Gloria Graham, who played like this girl that he was kind of sweet on before he got married to the character played by Donna Reed. Beulah Bondi, the interplay between mother and son, really, you know, just lovely and poignant and touching. And I swear to God, every time I see that movie, I'm always in tears. At the end, I know exactly what they're going to say. And every time James Stewart reads from the book where he says, you know, no man is a failure who has friends. I'm in a puddle on the floor. Every time. Every single time. So that's the gold standard. The movies one movie that I found that I just saw that was actually, I'd forgotten what a gem this was, is The Nightmare Before Christmas. And that was made in, I want to say, 1999?
I was going to say like the mid-90s maybe.
Maybe 93. I want to say it's 1993. But, you know, and here's what was interesting about that movie to me. That movie, I think, sort of gathered up all of the cynicism that we had about Christmas and wrapped it in a great big ball and said, let's just run with this and let's see where it takes us. And that's what I like about it. You have all of these sinister, just creepy elements. And this movie was made by Tim Burton. He directed it, and brilliant direction. The animation was just stunning. But the story was really interesting, too, because you've got this really creepy guy, Jack Skellington, who was voiced by Chris Sarandon. The voice was Chris Sarandon's, but the singing was actually done by Danny Elfman, who was the composer for the movie, which I thought that was interesting. But anyway, you've got Jack Skellington, who is like the king, the pumpkin king, and he's got Halloween just nailed. He knows exactly how to scare everybody, and he's like, it's down to a formula. He can do it in his sleep. So he's bored. And he accidentally discovers that there's this whole other holiday called Christmas where people do this other stuff that has nothing to do with, like, scaring people. He's like, well, that's kind of weird. Hey, maybe I can co-opt that holiday and, you know, maybe do something different in Pumpkin Town or wherever the heck he's from. And so he co-opts Christmas and he, you know, ends up practically ruining it. Brilliantly done, because you've got all of these different elements, this naive desire to do something good that just completely goes wrong, which kind of seems to sum up the way things go in the 2000s. So that's another movie that I want to bring to our audience's attention, but we'll probably continue this discussion on Google Hangouts on air, right, Greg?
Yes, ma'am. We've got about 2 minutes left on this show. We're hoping that those of you who are listening to us here on Blog Talk Radio will find your way to Google Plus and or YouTube under A Real Point of View to listen to the rest of our show, our after show. We want to thank you for joining us for this holiday season show. We'll be back after the new year. But you can always listen to our archives if you're interested in anything and everything having to do with it. So we thank you for joining us here on Blog Talk Radio and hope to see you soon on our YouTube channel and under YouTube and Google Plus on Hangouts on Air. Thank you again for listening. Have a wonderful holiday season. Be safe. Be careful. Oh, and watch a really, really good movie. Take care, everybody.
Happy holidays!